Hi, everyone. My name is Kirk Bachman, and welcome back to The Ultimate Dish. Today, I have the great pleasure of speaking with a truly inspiring guest, Bikay Ejeawari, Escoffier graduate and founder of Beck's Culinary Academy in Lagos, Nigeria. Bikay isn't your typical culinary expert. She's a chartered accountant who has seamlessly blended her financial acumen with her deep-seated passion for cooking and baking. With a successful career developing recipes and managing Cakes and More, which is a school lunch business located in Nigeria, she decided to take a bold step and establish Beck's Culinary Academy in 2021. Bikay's vision extends far beyond just running a culinary academy. She's on a mission to elevate the way we cook and revolutionize the culinary scene in Africa. She's also committed to raising awareness around gender equality and empowering women in the culinary industry. So buckle in as we dive in to Bikay's fascinating story, her vision for Beck's Culinary Academy, as well as the culinary landscape in Africa. And there she is. Good morning.
Good morning, Kirk. Wow.
You're beaming. You're beaming. Yes. I'm exhausted from the intro.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, that was a fantastic intro. Thank you so much.
It's all you. You're the star of the show. You're the star of the show. It's so good to see you. So good to see you.
So I think it's a privilege to be here with you, Kirk, because I only saw your name and signature written on all of the president's. I was on the president's list.
Yes.
All of this semester. So I never thought I would meet you in person. And then today, we're here.
to just talk. And there's so much to talk about. You're actually in Atlanta, going back home to Nigeria later this month. And if you're okay, I'm going to say congratulations because you're a grandma.
Yes. Thank you.
How is your beautiful grandchild?
And she's doing very well. Her name is Isabella Beke, by the way.
Of course.
You know, so that was a really surprising, that was a really nice thing for my daughter to do, you know. I felt truly honored. And then, yes, I've been in Atlanta for a while. I actually arrived in United States in October.
For graduation.
For the Escoffier graduation ceremony in Boulder. You remember, we met physically and, I mean, it was an awesome day. And then I do remember I said to you how Escoffier allowed me to find my culinary voice.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I'm so excited this morning is because we are actually sitting together. And I'm speaking, so my voice is going to be heard.
Yes, it is. And we have so much to talk about. I wanted to mention, too, I'm on your Instagram page quite a bit, and it's at Beck's Cookery, by the way. And you are so natural, I have to say, on the camera. Your charisma, your just love and passion is really contagious. So you can't upstage me today, okay? Otherwise, Noelle's going to get a new host for the show, and it's going to be Bikay. Well, I have to set the stage for all of our listeners. Noelle doesn't know that I'm going to do this, but it's important, and it sets the tone for how we met each other. You first reached out to me from Nigeria on September 6th of last year, and I probably read your email 10 times. And then I read it to other people, and you shared your observations, your comments, and your recommendations for our World Cuisine class, specifically around the cuisine, the food culture, and the cuisine of Africa. And your comments were so relevant, right? They were so poignant, so polite, and so helpful. You enlightened us around, or should I say, your personal experiences and knowledge around, this is just a few topics, The fact that Nigeria and most of West Africa and in that region, that soups and rice are major staples. You talked about fufu soup, is that right? Which is made in yams, cassava, or plantains, right?
Yes.
You also discussed in your note to me that women in Burkina Faso have been making beer for some 5,000 years. You talked to me about in Tanzania that both the women and the men participate in the harvest, and they also brew different sorts of beers. You went on to share information about Malawi in East Africa. And I think my biggest takeaway from our interaction back then, well, number one was it was very extremely helpful for us to enhance our curriculum, to really focus not just on the cuisine of Africa. I think my takeaway was that using the term Africa as an umbrella for all cuisine in Africa is probably a mistake, because there are so many cultures and different cuisines throughout all of Africa. And that was very enlightening to me. And I'll say also that in our communication, you let me know then that you would be attending graduation in person with your husband in Boulder, and you did that. And it was such a joy to tour you on the campus and to be on stage with you and take photos. And your husband was so dressed up that day. Can I just tell you? Just absolutely beautiful. But can we spend just a little bit of time with that as a backdrop for you to share a little of your passion about the cuisine of Africa? Maybe explore a little deeper what you were sharing with me a few months ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes, that email to you was a follow-up to my experience during the world cuisine class that we took when I was on this journey. And it was saddening to note that Africa was put under an umbrella. We've had to, oftentimes, when my kids were back in high school, the school had to do a program, a yearly program that was termed Africa is not a country. Okay. So, yes, taking from there, while I sat in class that day, we cooked meals from Africa. I said, wow, there's a need to let people know that they can't put us all under the same umbrella, even in the world of food, even in the culinary world. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that most of us do share similar staples. We all do the grains, we do the beans. Some of us, like in West Africa, we do a lot of rice and yams. And we, of course, do. We use the smoking technique to cook, the stewing technique and fermentation. You know, it goes on and on. There are such similarities, but some of us do not pay in the past. Okay, now, here's the second thing. I think the course we had dwelt a bit on what happened in the past, you know. So I think there's a need to, you could do like a throwback and mention, oh, in the past, X, Y, and Z could happen in A, B, and C places in Africa. But now, this is how we have embraced cooking, and this is how we cook. So I think that all through Africa, we need to highlight the different spices that we use. In Nigeria, for instance, we have a very unique flavor profile. We would do the Iru blended with the Scotch bonnet peppers. We call them Rodo, okay, and some crawfish. That would basically form a unique spice profile for our soups. And then we would roast our plantains. We can season before we roast. We can season with pepper. We can season with salt. And some people like it really spicy. So we kind of provide alternatives. You can do mildly spiced. You can do medium spice. You can do really hot spicy. So I just figure that talking to you about it should throw more light on how we cook in Africa, the different ways that it's different from one country to the other. Of course, we do not expect to have food from all of the countries put in one place, but Africa can be split up into four main categories. You can do the East, the West, the north, you know, and of course, the southern part of Africa.
I appreciate that. And know, too, that once our episode airs, it'll be pushed out to all of our faculty and our students. So what's beautiful about this sort of connection that we have is that it provides a channel for knowledge, for sharing of information across different sectors of people that come from all around the country and the world. We should talk a minute about your perspectives on the cuisine of the South, the Southeast of the United States, being in Atlanta for the last several months. Are you a fan or are you struggling?
Okay. Now, how do I say this? I haven't had too many opportunities to explore the cuisine in Atlanta. I must confess, the most I've done was to go to the Palm City Market, and I had a Mexican meal. I don't really think that counted. But the other day, I had a tacos, and it was quite nice, and I did enjoy it. You asked how I spent my time through this season. I actually decided to run an online class, and I promised my students almost 100 recipes. So I've been so busy cooking.
Oh my gosh.
So much.
I had no idea that you were working the whole time that you're there as well. My goodness.
I mean, I really didn't have time to go out and explore the cuisine in Atlanta.
But you're still cooking, but you're still cooking.
Yes.
No, we should take this opportunity, Bikay, to, as I said at the top of the show, your story is fascinating. Your personality is electric. Let's go back to the very beginning and let's talk about you a little bit. What was your childhood like growing up? And did cuisine play an important role in your family unit? What type of meals were served when you were growing up? And then, I guess, to wrap all that up, did you always envision yourself starting a career in the culinary arts to share your knowledge with others? How did it all come about?
Growing up was a very happy place. I was in this small family unit, just my mom and my siblings. I have three siblings.
Okay.
We grew up in Benin City, where we lived on these streets where every family knew each other. It was the typical space where you would say it takes a village to groom a child. That's the kind of setting I grew up in. So you would often find us outside playing. So we had a lot of outdoor activities. And then, because my mom was a head teacher, she actually had this mantra that the devil finds work for the idle hands. So she would often keep us occupied with board games. So I actually grew up playing a lot of board games like Scrabble, Monopoly, chess, and then we had this local game called Ayo. Ayo has some round circles on a board and it has round seats, and you just go round and then whatever, you determine the winner after a certain number of rounds. You know, that's the setting I grew up in. And then what we ate was actually not too different from what we eat today. We ate the same rice. Although at that time, rice would occur perhaps on Sundays and then sometimes twice a week. What's different now is that you can actually eat rice every day. So that's different. So we had rice, we had yam, we had the fufu, we had the staples. And it's interesting, my mom, because she could cook.
She was a good cook.
She was a good cook. And it was always fantastic, looking forward to dinner time, to lunch. And one major thing about her was she allowed us to eat what we wanted, especially me, because I was a precious child.
Were you a difficult child? Were you a difficult child?
Not at all. I was actually easygoing. I was the last child.
As you are now.
I was the baby of the family, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's funny, my diet actually revolved around plantains, rice, bread, and margarine. Those were basically the things I would eat. So if I should come home after school and there's no plantain, oh my goodness, it's like,
you've got a problem.
And my mom would have to provide plantain, you know. So that's how I grew up.
When did this idea of you, because, let's just go forward to where you studied. You studied accounting at a university in Nigeria.
Yes.
Was culinary on your mind before that, or did it come about a little bit later?
Oh, my goodness. No.
So
at that time in Nigeria, every parent wanted their child to be a professional in terms you had to study medicine, law, engineering, accountancy. You know, those were the go-to professionals. And life was such that you finished high school, you must go to university, and you must be a doctor or an accountant or a lawyer. You know, so we were trained to fulfill those expectations. So if you were good in math, like I was lucky, I was good in math and I loved mathematics. I loved economics. And when I did the basic accounting, I really enjoyed it. So naturally, I moved into university and I studied accounting. So that was how I got into studying accounting. Now, I have the privilege of hindsight, and I would say to you that as young as 7 years old, I used to play cooking games, you know, kind of like a make-believe that I was a chef. And then I'd actually take some sand and stones and wild growing plants, cut them up, create a cooking pot with tins. There were these tins that we bought with evaporated milk. So once the milk is used, I save all of those tins because those become my cooking pots. You know? And so when I think back, I'm like, oh my goodness, it's like you had it running in your veins. So that's what I'll spend a lot of time doing, just make believe. And then, by the time I got to high school, for some reason, I loved to bake. My mom had this old, like a cookery book. I'll take it, go through the recipes. And we actually didn't have an oven, but I had a friend who had an oven in her home. I'll go there and I'll say, Kate, we need to bake. We need to bake. You know? So it's so funny. Years back, you know what Kate said to me? Kate said, well, Becky, you know, all of those days you used to come to my home to bake. We used to tease you a lot behind your back. Little did I know that it's going to be your business and you would earn good money from it. So that's really how sharp back I got involved in cooking and baking.
Now, we'll be sure to send your friend the recording of our little chat here where she gets mentioned. And who's making fun of who now, right?
Exactly.
So eventually you decided to start your own school. I want to put a timeline around this. How long and how much did you enjoy working as a professional in the area of accounting? Was that something that was a big part of your life for many years?
No, not at all. After my graduation from university, I went through, okay, so now this is how it works back home. For the accounting profession, we have a professional qualifying exams, which you need to pass before you become a chartered accountant. And these exams are really competitive. And so right after university, I actually met my husband. And within the year, we decided to get married. And so I knew one thing I had to do was pass my qualifying exams before the wedding. Sure. Anyway, long story short, I did pass my qualifying exams a few months after we got married. Being a chartered accountant, to build a career as a chartered accountant meant you'd have to work in the banking sector or the oil industry to make the very best of it. And that would take a lot of time. So my husband and I decided we wanted one of us to be home for our kids because we wanted to just make sure our kids got the best out of us. And I am particularly not too keen on 9-to-5 jobs anyway.
Yes.
So I opted to be that person to stay home. So I actually started out my life being a stay-at-home mom. So while I was home, I took on baking and cooking. And it was amazing. After several years, there was a time I needed to be financially independent. There was a lot going on, and it was kind of stressful not being financially independent. So I mentioned to a friend of mine that, oh my goodness, I wonder if this was the right decision, because they were all rising in the banks, they were getting promoted, and they were all looking great, and they could afford so much. But I was on the home front, taking care of things. And she said to me, you know what, Beke, your cakes are really lovely to eat, and you keep doing them for free. Why don't you make those cakes? I will pay you for them. And that was actually how my cake business started off. So I'd bake and I get paid for them, and my business grew. Now, many years down the line, I think, you know, sometimes you reach this plateau where you seem to be bored, where it seems like, okay, I've seen it all, I've done all of this, I'm stressed out, what next? So I had to do some self-reflection. And I realized I enjoy teaching people, you know. I would tell my friends to bring their kids around during the holiday, and I'll teach them how to bake. So I said, wow, I think I'm going to love teaching people. I will have a cooking school. But this is so many years back, like almost 20 years ago. And I rested that passion. I continued to grow my businesses, started off the school lunch business. Then COVID happened. As soon as COVID happened, oh my goodness, most of the businesses shut down, and I was bored. I was just tired of sitting. And my husband and I said, oh, this will be a good time to put the foundation for a school together and actually do it formally. And then 2021, we rolled out Beck's Culinary Academy.
I love it. And we're going to talk about that. Can I just say before we move into that, that I feel like I'm in a lovely therapy session today. Your genuine enthusiasm and love of life and the way you're a storyteller. I literally could just sit here and listen all day long. So you can bill me. This is my therapy session for the day. But you, so
that's funny.
So that could be your next career, right? So so eventually, so we're around 2021 now, and you decided to start your own school in Nigeria called Cakes and More. And I love this on your website.
My business.
Oh, that was before 21.
My business, Cakes and More. That's school lunches and birthday cakes.
Okay.
So the culinary school, Beck's Culinary Academy.
That came in 21. That came in 21.
Yes.
And Cakes and More started when?
2003.
Okay, so yes. Long time, right?
Long time.
So on your website, it says, and I quote, this is your quote, "It is always a joy to see faces light up when we arrive with our branded bags. We source wholesome fresh ingredients and cook from scratch in our hygienic studio kitchen. Through feedback and research, we have developed a kid-friendly menu which provides options to enable each child to eat exactly what they want." And you said that earlier, that's how you grew up. Your mother allowed you and your siblings to eat exactly what you want. Can you tell me a little bit more about the branded bags?
Oh, okay. So what we actually do, we cook at our location, and then we have to portion the meals into little bowls, keep them covered, and then we deliver in the schools.
Okay.
So over time, we notice that the food will often get cold before the kids receive their meal. So we had to do a little bit of research, and we got just the regular cooler bites, and we got small individual ones, branded them. So every day we would have to tag each meal. We tag each meal with the child's name, place them in the bag, zip up, and deliver. So that's where the food stays warm for a longer period of time. Yes.
Okay. And so, gosh, there's so much to talk about here. Want to talk a little bit about BETS, and maybe even if you, because there'll be some entrepreneurs, students who want to be entrepreneurs that'll listen to this. What sort of challenges, let's talk about BETS. What sort of obstacles or challenges did you have to overcome to start a culinary academy? And then if you could, BK, also talk, was your mother entrepreneurial in any way? What, like, where does this come from? Are your siblings entrepreneurial as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Straight up, yes. I did mention my mom was a head teacher.
Yeah.
On the side, she was actually a seamstress. Okay. And she would create these beautiful attires using, what is it called? You use patterns, using patterns.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And she was well sought after, but she did it as a hobby. So she would think at time, and in that aspect, yes, she was an entrepreneur, although she didn't grow it into a bigger business, but she did spend time doing that. And all of my siblings actually are entrepreneurs. My brother is a medical doctor, but he chose to build a hospital back home in Nigeria because, I mean, I think at heart, every human being can be an entrepreneur.
But you said it earlier, sometimes some of this runs in your veins, right? So it's in the DNA. So it's fascinating. So were there obstacles from the community or finances or just the need for a school that you had to overcome as an entrepreneur?
Yes. You remember my desire to have a cooking school dates as far back as 20 years ago. And when I realized I had that desire, I was excited. And the first thing I did was try to put a plan together, like a business plan. And I approached a bank. I had a friend who was highly placed in one of the banks because you look towards getting some financial facility from the bank, right?
Yeah.
And then we had a conversation and I explained, you know, the excitement of a would-be entrepreneur, you know, I told him all of the facts and all of the gains. And he looked at me when I finished, he looked at me and he said, Beke, I'm not sure that's a business that's going to yield enough profits. I was shocked. I said, why not? He said, because in our present environment, we do not have enough. Oh, God. We do not have enough. What is it called? Guidance. No, policies. We do not have enough policies guiding the food industry. The food industry was not particularly regulated. So he thought it would be a bit risky to put a lot of money into building a school at that time. So my initial challenge was the funding, okay?
Sure, sure.
And fortunately, moving forward, we're in such a good place now in the culinary industry in my country. We do have regulations in place, especially in terms of food safety and hygiene, you know. The hospitality industry is blooming. And there's a demand for professionals. So now the narrative has changed because you can confidently tell a young man or a young woman to go get a culinary degree because the gains are many. Financial gains are good. You can set up your own business. You can be a chef tutor and you'll be so satisfied, you know, you derive so much pleasure from being a chef.
Yes, yes. How would you, I'm fascinated, how would you, Piquet, define or describe the culinary scene in West Africa, for example, today?
Wow. Vibrance. That's the first word that comes to my mind. Vibrant.
Yeah.
exciting. It's like it's blown out. And people are realizing, oh my goodness, we have good food, we have delicious food, we can do a lot of things with this. So we've had a lot of young people get professional degrees and they're running away with it. It's magical.
you should be the spokesperson for the country's culinary scene. On your homepage, it says fostering love and peace through food. Absolutely love that, by the way. What can your students expect from your school when they attend your school? You said while you've been away, you've been doing some online cooking for them. But in general, what are you trying to accomplish with your school?
So in my school, we decided to start off small because I believe in adding building blocks after a solid foundation. So we actually have 3 short courses. So any student that comes to my school will expect to get knowledge on culinary foundations. You know, we'll run through techniques and methods of working with ingredients. We'll run through health, safety, and hygiene. And then we would also teach them cake baking, pastry making, bread making. Walk them through recipes that actually yield good results. And we finish off with Nigerian cuisine. So that's really where we are at this time. For our students, we want to start from scratch. We want to give them the fundamental knowledge of how to be good chefs. We want them to go away confident that once they see any ingredient, they can identify the state it's in. Is this good? Is this usable? Will it be okay for human consumption? They'll be able to tell what to do with that ingredient. You know, we give them that space to become creatives so they can express themselves through their cooking. That's what we do with students, with the adults who come to Bet Culinary, because we truly believe that when we cook for people, when we bake for people, a little bit of ourselves go into that to show them that we care. Because we believe in that at Bakes, we use recipes. We use recipes that we have adjusted to make sure it meets the flavor profiles that our audience is expecting. And then we tell our students that the recipe is not the be it and be all of this game. The recipe is just a guideline to help you go through what you need to do, to help you put your ingredients together, to help you make your mise en place. And we teach them the techniques that we guide them towards creating a perfect plate. So that's the word I use at Beck's Culinary. So every time you cook, you must produce a perfect plate. And what does it take? Yes, you have a recipe, you do your preparation, you use the correct techniques, and with an ample amount of care, you definitely produce an excellent dish.
So beautifully said. I don't know that Augusto Scoppier could have said it any better. It's the exact philosophy that he spoke to and wrote about so many years ago. You can provide a foundation. You can help people understand the most appropriate techniques to apply to a variety of ingredients. But more than anything, don't be bound or detained by preconceived expectations, right? Be creative. Express yourself, your food. I love how you said that every dish that you create should be a part of you that you're sharing with your guest. It's so beautiful. I think there's a book in there somewhere, Bikay, that we need to start thinking about writing a book together. Let's fast forward to 2022, which was a little bit after you started Bex. And I'm just fascinated by this. And as if you weren't busy enough, you decided to make this huge decision and enroll at Escoffier and earned your diploma in culinary arts. And you've said this to me, you've written this, you've said that this immersive experience further solidified your expertise and expanded your culinary knowledge. So absolutely beautifully said. I'm just, as a truly genuine question, I'm just so curious why you chose, we talked about it a little bit informally, why did you choose to go back to culinary school? Because you were longing for information, more information to better yourself? And how did you land upon Escoffier as the place that you wanted to be?
Very interesting question. So this actually takes us back to early February 2022, okay?
Okay.
So I had to come to the U.S. to be with my kids. My kids actually school in the U.S. So sometimes I do come in to visit them. And I was intent on improving my skills. I actually didn't have the plan to do a culinary degree. All I wanted to do was a short course, maybe a week, 2 weeks on food plating. That was all I wanted to do because I figured, my goodness, I can cook, I can bake, I can decorate cakes. Who needs to go to culinary school? So let me just add on a food plating course. And I felt that would be a breeze and it wouldn't take any time. So I began to search for places where I could do that. But somehow, most of the things that popped up were restaurants advertising one-day classes, you know, maybe coming to do some pasta, coming to do some just one-day classes. And then what I saw Escoffier, it kept popping up anytime I searched Google. So I decided to call Escoffier. I actually took time. I went on your website, I looked through, I couldn't really find any short-term courses. I filled out the form and I called. I can't really remember. I think I spoke to someone called Jeremy at that time. I was like, okay, fine. I know a lot of these things, but I'd like to do menu design, you know. I'd like to, you know, experience all of these other portions of culinary. Fine, I know how to do my accounting and all of that, but how about being taught specifically how it's done in the culinary world, you know, because I had not experienced that. I just did it from my general knowledge of accounting. So I called Escoffier back and I enrolled.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Are there any specific, other than, of course, us meeting in Boulder, but are there any other fond memories that you have of your experience over those 15 months?
Yes, yes. I remember particularly at the beginning, we had to do the orientation and they had the spotlight challenges. And I wanted to be spotlighted.
I'm sure.
I got spotlighted.
You got spotlighted. I'm not surprised. Yes. I'm not surprised.
You know, on the mise en place, and I think on the breakfast one as well, you know, I was super, super excited, you know, and I beat my chest and I was like, oh my goodness, I've got it in me.
I love it. That
really, really spurred me on. It made me want to do more and more. I loved those challenges. Yes, those were some highlights, you know, that kept me going. And we had this chef, I really liked Chef Shanta. Yeah, Shanta. And she would say, as far as it all goes, so many times. So anytime I tune into class for the first 2 weeks, I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to grow much. She's going to say, as far as it all goes again, you know? And funny enough, by the fifth week, I found myself saying, as far as it all goes. That's a cool moment. You know, we've kept in touch. Chef Shante and
I love it.
That class was really exciting. Yes,
yeah,
fun moments.
Have you seen that you've been able to enhance or implement some of what you learned through your program for your current business?
Yes.
Yeah.
First off, What comes to mind is labeling. We did that when we did culinary foundations and we did fabrication, where we had to fabricate the chicken, right? So the chef put us through labeling. I found that really useful because we had to label them by parts. You know, we put the legs together, the thighs together, and then we put the dates. We put the dates, we'll keep them, and we use them as needed. I found it really useful because now we use the FIFO method, first in, first out. So as soon as we label back in my business, we go through that process. So that is definitely one thing that I took away.
I love that. Yeah. Very important, right? Just from a sanitation and inventory control perspective.
Yes.
100%.
So something else that comes to mind is the externship program. I think it's an excellent program because at first I didn't want to do the externship. I actually spoke to a chef about it. I'm like, okay, I have my own place. Can't I just do my externship hours there? But I was told no, that I needed to go somewhere else to fill in those hours. Mm-hmm. So I had to do that. That was the last semester, you know.
Yep.
So I reached out to one of the most prestigious hotels in the city I live, you know, and they took me on as an extern. It was such an amazing experience. Of course, I'm not as young as some of the people they have in their kitchens, right? So I get in there and everyone is so polite. Oh, madam, no. Oh, madam, don't. I want to do this. I need to do this. So you know what they did to me? So the butcher now comes to show me how to, you know, when you want to do the lollipop chicken, so you need to cut up the wing and push it down, push it like right down. So he showed me how to do it. And I did a couple of them. And he said, here, do that. He gave me a bag, a full bag of chicken wings. And I'm like, my word, okay. So I started doing it. He didn't know the stuff I was made of, that I'm resilient. And after I'd done like half of the bag, he comes back. He said, no, you need to stop. It's enough. I said, No. You know, so the externship. And I finished it. And I think with that alone, I made my mark in the kitchen. And they started to listen to me. They looked up to me and we worked together very well because they figured, oh my goodness, she can do some hard work. And I was able to build a network of chefs in the industry without Escoffier insisting on that externship experience. I would still be a lone ranger, so to speak. But now I have this array of chefs behind me that I can call upon at any one time and they'll come and we can work together. We've been exchanging ideas. We've kept in touch. We've exchanged recipes and know-how. Sometimes I'll call them, oh, I want to prepare this Thai dish, what next? And that's it. So the externship experience is an excellent one. It has worked well for me. And finally, I think there's one more thing. Oh my goodness, the passion of the Escoffier chefs. I think they've infused some of it in me because you guys are so passionate about seeing your students succeed. And that's such a good thing, you know. So I've adopted the same approach. I want my students to succeed and I go out of my way to help them. I encourage them. I give them the tools they need. I give them the advice they need. I keep in touch with them even after they've left. So I think that passion I did get from working with your chefs. Yes.
I love it. And your enthusiasm is infectious. I just love it. Okay, you mentioned in your bio that I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, that you're passionate about empowering women in the culinary industry, which I find incredibly inspiring. Is there mentorship that you're advocating for personally and through your business as well for women specifically?
For women specifically, what I do through my business is an apprenticeship program. Women who desire to work in the culinary field, I employ them as apprentices and I train them. I teach them how to do everything we need to do. And I also pay them allowances. And that has worked excellently. So I see them grow. You know, when someone comes to you and has no idea what techniques to use to move plain flour and butter and sugar, you know, to mix them together and form a cake, something edible and delicious. Absolutely no idea. And you watch this person grow to the extent that they begin to create their own stuff. They realize that, okay, if I reduce the math and science involved, it's like, okay, if I reduce this flour a little bit, you know, I could get it to be more fluffy and this. So I've surrounded myself in my workplace with such women. So they are apprentices. Some of them actually stay long term. Some of them stay just 2 years and they move on. So in that way, I have empowered women. And on a personal note, I have had a conversation with the Women's Society in my church, and I've offered them a 75% discount on tuition. So when they find a woman who desires to become a professional chef, they bring her to me and then we train. So yes, those are some of the ways I've tried to empower women.
I love it. Bravo. You know, I'm curious, and thank you for indulging me for as long as we've been chatting. We've gone way over our time, but I'm just fascinated. When I think about, or you think about, the cultural aspects and let's say the local flavors of your culinary creations and what you produce at the school, how do you believe that your school and your work, McKay, is contributing to the overall culinary landscape in Nigeria?
Okay.
It's a big question.
Yes, actually, it is. But we are very much work in progress. We are still growing, but we continue to impact in the area of our school lunches because it's the same process that we impute in our school lunches. And we do provide private catering as well. So when close friends and family members have occasions like landmark celebrations, 50th birthday, 90th birthday, 80th birthday, those come to mind readily, or large receptions, we are asked to cook. So we try to differentiate ourselves because there's a lot going on in Lagos, so to speak. And our impact is such that we have people call us back over and over again. Oh, I had this meal there. Can you do this for me? Oh, I had this snack at such and such a place. Can you repeat the same to me? So in that light, we are gaining ground. We are gaining ground. And then for the school, my word, since this year opened, we've received so many calls, you know, because we have a course starting off on the 12th of February. And it's really encouraging seeing all of these people calling in. Like I said before, it's been a blow up of the culinary industry in my country, and people are eager now to become educated in that field. And we ourselves are taking time to convince, where is the word convince? No, to put out the information that, listen, it's okay to be a culinary professional. You don't have to be a doctor or a lawyer. It's okay if your desire is to make good food for people. Come, we will train you. I remember at the end of 2022, the Culinary Arts Practitioners Association in Nigeria, because we have that association. We partnered with them. We actually sponsored an event where they brought a lot of high school children. It was such an inspiring occasion. After I spoke to them and we shared with them how far we've come, two of those kids were so happy. They said they really want to become chefs, but they are afraid to broach the topic with their parents because in Nigeria, you are expected to just do something much more than become a chef, you know. But after that experience, they were confident enough, you know, said, yes, yeah, so I can let my mom know that this is a recognized profession. This is an area where I can make my mark on the world, you know.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Okay, we've come towards the end of our chat. It's been absolutely lovely. But before I let you go, the name of our podcast is The Ultimate Dish. So in your mind, and I'm going to try to, I think I know what your ultimate dish is, but I need you to explain it. Let's see if I can share screen here. Can you see that?
Yes, I can see it.
This is your ultimate dish, and I have to know all of it.
Okay, so if you had asked me 2 months ago what my ultimate dish is, I'll tell you right up, beans, with stewed beans porridge with fried plantain. It's been my all-time favorite dish, okay? Uh-huh. But now, very recently, my doctor confirmed a diagnosis of pre-diabetes. Okay, so the past 2 months, I've had to go through a mindset change of how I see food and how I prepare food and what I eat. So because I love beans and plantain so much, for me, this has become my ultimate dish. I've prepared it with the same white beans, the same ripe plantain. But what did I do? I decided to grill my ripe plantain instead. I grilled it until it adopted the golden brown delicious color because it reminds me of the fried plantain. And I cooked my beans until it became tender and succulent. And I have my beans lying on top a bed of salsa, which I made with some green peppers, red peppers, and I infused the flavor profile I love so much, which is the scotch bonnet pepper, some crayfish, and some dried catfish. So that's what I have on the base. Yes. And then I decided to top it with same salsa and do a trail of pickled onions and some pickled cucumbers. And it gave me the umami experience, I must say.
I just love it. This is a first. We've done 100 episodes on The Ultimate Dish, but I've never heard a dish explained quite the way you just explained yours with that much passion. Unbelievable, Bikay. Thank you. Thank you so much. And please give my best to your husband when you get back. You and I will certainly stay in touch. And my best to your daughter and your grandchild. And thank you so much. What a lovely conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you. And I do hope you get better very quickly.
I will. I think I got better in the last hour talking to you. Nice. I think I did.
That's so nice to know. So nice. Thank you so much, Kirk.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Ultimate Dish Podcast, brought to you by Auguste Escoffier School of Culinary Arts. Visit escoffier.edu/podcast to find any materials mentioned during the podcast, including notes, links, and other resources. And if you can, please leave us a rating on Apple or Spotify and subscribe to support our show. This helps us reach more aspiring individuals ready to take the next step toward their dream careers. Thanks for listening.